Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Google builds a blimp, Apple builds a wireless, chargeless phone, and Wonder Woman hits theaters. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Back in the days on the boulevard, I landed. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. What you're hearing is that the Q-Tip Tribe Called Quest sample,
yes, sir.
From Check the Rhyme on Snoop Dogg's new album, Back in the Days. Snoop's album is fire, telling you right now.
Okay.
You got the young
Uncle Snoop
up there, like he's very much making a play, talking all that Martha Stewart shit, all that like hosting game shows. Like, he's coming, like, don't forget about me. This is real. I'm still Snoop. And it's like his best work to me in, like,
Oh, wow.
8 years?
I haven't had a chance to peep it out yet, but I've heard great things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a huge statement. His best piece of work in 8 years?
I feel like Snoop puts out I feel like Snoop's good for, like, a heat rock every 3 years to me. Like, every third album, he comes with something great. But this is, like, this is pretty strong.
I mean, I think it's pretty amazing, though. His career, and just his being able to sustain this long and still be relevant and still have the, I guess, I mean, now he has the elder status, the Uncle Snoop status.
Yeah, like he's older than you.
He is. But yeah, man, I got to peep it out. Peep out the record.
Yeah, I listened over the weekend. I was very, very, very surprised how good it was. And how hard he's coming. Like, he really
coming with that gangster stuff.
He's coming with the Supreme gangster stuff. Like, anyway,
Supreme.
Good. I'm serious. I was like, oh, Snoop. All right, so we're back. Memorial Day weekend is over. We're, like, starting to settle into summer, which means we got products, we got movies, we got news, all kind of stuff jumping off.
Yeah.
How was your weekend? Anything to report?
Nah, man. Low-key, with the family, having fun. Sipping on some sip, eating some good food. What about you? I heard you went down south a bit.
I did. Went down to San Diego. Had a very relaxing time. Nothing to report. anyway, but what is in the news is Google once again. This is so Sergey, I can't pronounce it. Sergey Brin, co-founder of Google and Alphabet, is building a $100 million air yacht.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's saying is he's building a $100 million air yacht to help the poor. Jeez. That's what he's saying he's doing. Critics are saying he's building a $100 million air yacht to, like, hang out with his friends and, like, to fly around the world and be cool. He says he's going to use it to drop off, you know, supplies and do humanitarian projects all over the globe. Meanwhile, some people say it's just an excuse to go for him to party all over the world, and this is what they do. I don't know if I care, but what do you think?
I mean, that's a lot of criticism that people have of some of these Silicon Valley, you know, technology execs, is that, you know, the pendulum of whether or not it's philanthropic or if it's, like, pure, you know, greed for them or whatever, or pure, you know, profit for them.
Right.
Like, it's always, like, the pendulum. Which side is it swinging on? But, I mean, I feel like looking at it from a technological story, the fact that he wants to build something that is, it will be the largest aircraft, piece of technology that's ever been designed and developed. Like, I think that they were saying it'd be 200 meters long,
yep,
or some crazy number like that. I mean, the fact that he
never
wants,
catch me on that thing, by the way.
Man, I mean, you have so many inherent problems. Like, how are you going to protect it from being shot down?
Yep.
Like, how are you going to keep it balanced when it doesn't have, like, you know, the cargo and stuff in it?
Right.
Like, but I think that's fresh that he and Google and all the other developers will be able to work on that and develop that. And if it can facilitate dropping food and medicine and various forms of help and need and assistance for people that are in remote areas or in areas of disasters, I think that'd be great. And I think because of this initial, like, criticism, I think he'll be even careful to not make it like, hey, it's just my private, you know, situation where I fly to wherever.
He's gonna be popping bottles in the jacuzzi, dropping down. Are they okay down there?
Oh, I didn't mean to drop that bottle.
Another ace of spades. Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's terrible.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't. I get the criticism that all these Silicon Valley guys, you know, as shown as parodied in the TV show Silicon Valley, seem to have this like centralized, almost fake, altruistic thing in at the center of them, when really it's about gigantic
making
profits.
Money,
yeah, gigantic profits, but you have to appear as this sort of like, you know, noble being who's out to do better
good,
in the world.
Right.
Yeah. I don't care. Like, if they're really actually doing good in the world, whether it's just that they want to look that way or they actually mean it, let them do good.
I mean, I don't know, man. This is my last note on this. I don't see the point of him developing something this expensive just for personal need. Like, why? Like, why do I need a 200-meter plane?
I got a blimp, son.
For what though? That doesn't even make sense. So maybe I'm gonna give him more benefit of the doubt that he's actually trying to do it to assist people. So.
It just feels like if you're gonna, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's more efficient ways to help people around the world than flying around in a blimp and dropping some shit. But maybe not. I don't know. But whatever it is, it sounds dope. But I know one thing for sure: you will not catch me in that blimp.
Hey, sir. You can catch me. I like stuff like that.
Okay, good. Well, let me know how it works out. You'll not catch me in there.
I might drop you off something.
Yeah, I'll be waiting for the drop off. Moving on to Zuckerberg and the gang. Apple, Facebook, Google are condemning Texas's transgender bill. So Texas is really come forward, and they're back with this hardcore bill saying basically you cannot use a restroom if you don't have if you're not the same gender as that's on your birth certificate,
right?
Which is sort of like really behind the curve of where the rest of the country seems to be, but Texas is coming down on that. So, in response, 15 of the largest tech companies have come out to condemn this publicly,
yeah,
calling discriminatory legislation. And this is, well, hopefully you'll see a lot more of this. And maybe they've let a alert to the governor. We got Amazon, Facebook, IBM, Apple, Microsoft, Google,
yeah,
Hewlett Packard, Dell, Cisco, Salesforce. I mean, these are huge companies. So they're all saying, look, this isn't right, and they're bad for our employees and bad for business. And
it's bad for business because if this bill does pass and they have some type of business in that state, like these companies might pull out. You know?
Yeah, well, this is the power that these companies have. This 15, and I really hope that you know Mark Zuckerberg and Tim Cook and Brad Smith and Randy and all these guys will stick to this stuff, because this is where the real power is. I mean,
I like the fact that you know they're not doing it in a silo, that they're galvanizing all their influence and all their power to be able to make a statement.
Right.
I think that's the beauty of it all, is that, okay, you know, contrasting to the last story, is like, this is an example of a tech company or a person with influence coming together with other people of influence and say, hey, we're going to take a political stand,
right,
and say, no, this is not cool. This is unacceptable.
Also, I agree. Also, this could be a precursor of what we're going to see, hopefully, with the Paris Accord. I mean, you know, Trump is supposed to make his decision like a reality show,
right?
Make his decision on, you know, what he's going to do with the Paris situation this week, and all sources say he's going to pull out. And so all this talk, look, he put together this whole sort of committee, yeah, with Elon Musk and all these people on there, and they're supposed to like help him, you know, do the right
advise him on the right things,
and they're all there. Even Jared Kushner and Ivanka were supposed to be there to, you know, make him do the right things. And if he pulls out anyway, it'll be interesting to see what Elon Musk and all these other folks do if they then use their influence to sort of say, well, then we aren't supporting you as well publicly.
But I don't think most of those guys on that committee were in support of Trump. It's more so like, hey, we have an agenda, and we want our agenda to be heard by Trump. And so by being on this committee, it ensures that we will be able to, you know, be vocal about the things that we care about. Whether or not he agrees, whether or not he enforces it, that's a different thing.
That's a good point. But I think that, you know, at a certain point, the thought was, you know, we're here to force this, to sort of subtly push this, and Trump's it seems to be listening, but now not anymore. And same thing with your boy Kushner. You know, he was the good guy in the group, but you know, he's busy back channeling Russia, so I don't know.
Hey, man,
we'll see. But yeah, but anyway, that's so anyway, that's I'm glad that this thing is working in Texas, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Exactly.
All right. all the rumors, iPhone's coming out September, iPhone 8. One of the big rumors is obviously the AI is big, and also the wireless charging. This guy Chris Mills says he's got some proof. I know you're out on this. Some proof that wireless charging is actually going to be a thing. He's got a shot, a screenshot of an X-ray with the battery right in the joint,
the coil.
Ready to go. Yeah. So I don't know.
I
know how much you care about this.
I know I care about it. I think if Apple is able to be innovative in this space, then it's great. If they're just replicating what technology is already out,
I thought you like Starbucks. Starbucks already got this.
Man, like if it's just a replication and just in an iPhone, like it sucks. Like if they're pushing boundaries, like if I can charge this thing and not have to put it on the dock, I could be in my pocket or if it could be across the room, then that's something. You know what I'm saying? But if it's the same shit where I have to actually put it on there and it charges that way with the syncing of the dock, then right, great news. Wow. I'm not gonna run to the store
to get
it.
But can you just give iPhone a little credit?
Credit for what?
We're no longer gonna make you plug your joint in, you can just sit it down on the table.
For what? That's like saying I'm gonna give them credit for putting a frontward facing camera.
Right.
So when everyone else has it.
You're saying is you don't look to them to catch up, you look to them to innovate.
I mean, but that's what Apple's known. Like, Apple didn't create the first MP3 player. Apple didn't create the first iPhone. They just made it better. They made it innovative. So unless they're making it better, if they're not making it better, then it's like, it's not news.
Okay, well, you know? Well, speaking of which, looks like they are trying to make something better, which is the AI. They have this brand new dedicated AI chip for the iPhone, which is supposed to blow everything away. It's supposed to make Siri like super smart,
okay,
super responsive. It's called the Apple Neutral Engine, the ANE.
Stop making it sound cool.
It's gonna revolutionize everything.
The ANE.
I mean, augmented reality and AI are two core pillars of Apple's future. That's what Tim Cook's been saying. Mm-hmm. And look, they're really, really hot on this. And for doubters like you, they say, I know people may be skeptical, but wait and see. The dedicated AI chip, like this means nothing to you. You're like, nah.
No, I'm definitely into AI technology. And I think that, you know, I think we covered this 2 weeks ago about the mobile assistant technology. Like, we talked about Google Assistant, we talked about Siri, we talked about Alexa, and I think that, you know, all of them are kind of like in the same space, and I guess right. In the race, like no one's really ahead. And so if Apple's able to, if with this new technology able to really push this forward, then yeah, that would be something special. But again, like, how often do we really use AI on our devices?
Well, we don't know yet because the AI
has changed the game.
The AI hasn't been invented for us to be able to use it properly, maybe.
Okay.
So I mean,
wait. So you mean to tell me that you're excited about these two things?
No, I'm not excited about them until they make me excited. I'm interested to see what they're gonna be. I want to see Tim Cook come out and tell me about the new AI and how the new battery is gonna change my life, and then maybe they'll sell me on it.
If he comes out on stage and he gives a keynote and he's like, "Hey guys, the new iPhone." And it's charging right now. If he says something like that, then that's amazing.
Okay. the new iPhone. Watch this.
Like, come on. No.
That was for you, Achille Shine. Then you're out. Okay. Out. I don't know. We'll see. It'll be like a little table, just sitting down on a table. We changed the game, folks.
Right?
We've done it again.
That's so stupid.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I'm really curious about the AI because they're making such a big deal about AI and where, like you said, where Echo is and where Alexa is, and I mean, there are places now that they're pretty strong. So I'm very interested to see what Apple's going to do with this stuff. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other thing: the switching gears off of the iPhone into this. Into this essential, the Andy Rubin essential phone.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I'm not an Android person, so I don't give a crap about this, but it's $700. Like, what do you think about this phone? I mean, it looks supposed to look amazing. It's doing all this great stuff. It's got dual cameras, 360 camera, all this stuff, but, like, I don't know.
I'll tell you this.
$700?
I'm more interested in the man behind all these things. Like, my man invented the Sidekick. He invented Android. Like, come on. That's huge. Like, yeah. And so the fact that he is presenting his newest thing, which is going to, like, redefine the landscape of how we communicate and how we engage on our mobile devices. I agree with you. I'm not a fan of Android. I don't have an Android product.
Right.
But I like the fact that he's trying to do something completely different than everyone else. And
right.
I mean, I think he even said, like, right now with mobile technology, like, everything is pretty much the same. There's really no leaps and bounds in innovation. And so he's trying to figure out the whole Internet of Things situation, or how all these devices talk to one another, and how he can centralize that and create something super fresh off the mobile device from there. I like that.
I do like the interesting thing about this, other than how this is not just a phone.
Exactly.
Like, this is not a phone that does shit. This is a assistant to your life. Like, how does this device interact with the rest of your life?
Exactly.
Let's see, if you start from there, and oh yeah, we'll put a camera, we'll put a phone, put all this other stuff.
Right, right.
That's a good place to start. Yeah. So, I mean, that to me is very interesting. I don't know. I mean, the Sidekick was fresh. You know, so we'll see.
Yeah.
I wonder if this flip up.
He has wins.
Yeah, so. No, he definitely has some W's up there. Yeah. So we'll see. And it looks great. So that the design is great. Kind of back in that whole old school I can't draw my blank. Old school built Steve Jobs era Apple, where the design is forward, which I feel like we talked about this. I mean, even though Ive is still there, Johnny Ive is still there, like, it seems like we've lost a lot of that design forward coolness of Apple. So maybe we'll see if we'll bring some of that back. Speaking of coolness and design forward, Blue Apron is still around, still back. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient recipe delivery service in the country. There are some other ones. There are some imitators. There are some people who do the stuff, but no one does it as well as Blue Apron. It allows you to have these beautiful restaurant quality meals at your home that you can cook. Even if you can't cook, you can cook these meals for less than $10 a day. They're fantastic. I've had them. I've tried them. They come right to your house. They are fresh. They use all kinds of good stuff. They use, like, beef and chicken that come from responsibly raised animals. They use seafood that comes that's sustainably sourced from the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. All kinds of good stuff. The food is good too. They have all kinds of good stuff. Some upcoming menus: warm smoked trout and asparagus with a salad with fingerling potatoes and garlic croutons, spiced zucchini enchiladas with creamy lime and tomato rice. That is for your vegetarians. A latte style vegetable tostadas, summer squash, poblano peppers, and cilantro rice, peachy honey glazed chicken, and mashed sweet potatoes, collard greens, and Thai basil.
That sounds delicious.
I don't feel like I can cook any of that stuff, but with Blue Apron, you can cook all of it. It is amazing. Here's what you do. You can check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals for free. That's free with free shipping. Go to blueapron.com/geek, as in geek nerd tech. That's blueapron.com/geek. You'll love how it looks. You'll love how it feels and tastes. Come home to incredibly home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. That's blueapron.com/geek. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Let's go.
Blue Apron is fantastic. I do love it. I want some more Blue Apron food. So hit me up, Blue Apron. So moving on to the hacking. The hacking situation is still heavy. And there is this new bill that's proposed by this GOP congressman that basically wants to stop on this hacker. We live in a world now where people are hacked, and so we hack back. And if you hack you, I'm gonna hack you back. That's kind of the way you retaliate.
Yeah.
This guy's proposing, like, a stand your ground law for cyberspace, which essentially means that, like, if you are a legal victim of if you're a victim of hacking, you can't hack back. So you can hack back. I'm sorry. Well, you can hack back.
He's purporting that the bill would allow you to.
Right.
Right.
It's like a stand your ground law. Like, exactly. When people come up to you with a, you know, with a gun, you can,
I can pull out my gun.
Pull out your gun, shoot them back. Right. That's on some, definitely on some GOP stuff right there.
Absolutely.
But what do you think about this? I mean, I
think that, you know, reading that article, I think it was interesting. In the sense that I think the original bill was signed in the 80s, I believe.
Yep.
I might be mistaken. But yeah,
the stand your ground law. Are you talking about the hack law?
No, I'm talking about the, I forgot the name of the law, but it's a law that it gives certain protocols as to what you can do with computers.
Okay, got it.
And so I think it was passed in the 80s and it's been the same law all the way up until now. And so what he's saying, he wants to change it. But I don't, one of the ladies that is a, I don't know what government agency she's a part of, but she was saying that She is a part of figuring out how to, I guess, when someone is hacked, how to be able to retrieve information, how to prevent them from doing it again. And she's saying that if you allow other people to hack back, it's gonna make it worse. It's not gonna make it better.
Right.
And so she's saying that this is a terrible bill. It's a terrible idea because if someone hacks you, how will I know then, like, where it started? You know what I'm saying?
Or where it ends.
The origins. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, where it ends. Like, exactly. Hack me and I hack you back.
Right.
Yeah, you get where it ends, because I mean, like, you know, it sounds very like schoolyard. He hacked me first. You know? Right. I was just hacking him because he hacked me. Like, yeah, so I don't know. And then where does it end? It's a constant. You can't encourage this behavior.
No.
And you can't have laws in place to say that this is, you know, okay. And I think that it's kind of, it feels like a very sort of naive law. I mean, everything is not very much like in the, you know, you shoot me, I'm gonna shoot you. It's not all about stand your ground. It feels like there's little things a little more nuanced and complicated than that. But
right.
You know, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But it doesn't sound like it could be right for me. But what does sound right is Warby Parker, who I do have some glasses from, who I have gotten this prescription eye doctorship from, has a new app check, or is proposing one, or has one, where you don't even got to go to the eye doctor. You just do it on your app. They'll check you out. They'll give you a prescription, and they'll send you your stuff. That is revolutionary. That's also putting a lot of optometrists out of work. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a desktop app, it's kind of cool. You know, I mean, it saves you the time, energy, and money to have to go to the optometrist and go through that whole process, even though there's other things that you get during an eye checkup exam that you won't get through the service. But the fact that you could, like, see at least what your prescription is going to be, you know, online on your computer, and then get your glasses in a day or a week, within a week, you know, I think that's pretty fresh.
Yep.
And I see a lot of I guess eyewear manufacturers and businesses that they're offering you the service to be able to try on glasses, and you know, based on the, you know, taking a picture or the video, you put on the glasses. But now that you could do the actual exam, I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. And I just wonder about, you know, this is again automation of this in different ways. Taking a job. This isn't jobs being shipped to China.
Right.
This isn't jobs being stolen by Mexicans. This is just innovation. So this is kind of like what we're talking about. And I think that, you know, I think it's good in a lot of ways, but a lot of ways we have to sort of figure out how to combat this, you know, to make sure our jobs are still safe here from technology. But I love it. I love the idea of it. I think it's dope.
I mean, does that mean, though, in your opinion, does that mean that motherfucking glasses should be cheaper?
Yes.
All right now.
Yes. But, all right, you know, now. Warby Parker already makes the argument that the glasses are cheaper. They're already $100.
Right.
And they've already, like, cut out a bunch of middlemen. So I don't know if they're going to make them. They can't really cut out many more middlemen. So I don't know what that means for Warby Parker, but maybe in a general sense, sure.
Hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Last question. Do you think, like, the big chains that actually have, like, for instance, the Walmart or Target, they have, you know, they have the optical segment within the store. Do you think that they'll begin to develop this technology as well?
Absolutely. Because it's just, I mean, I think it cuts costs for them internally as a store, because they can eliminate that space and use that shelf space for someone else. They can still brand it theirs and still have the technology. I wonder about people like lens crafters and some of those other folks. I wonder what they're going to do.
Right.
For the Walmarts, Targets, and Costcos, for sure.
Right.
For sure. I think that's a no-brainer for them. So we'll see. Moving forward, Google Earth has this thing, this storytelling app, which I'm not exactly sure how it works, but it is called Global Voyager, and it's a storytelling platform. I guess it allows you to use Google Earth to sort of go and do different tours of things. And one of the things they have is a Beatles tour, where it takes you through all to the tavern, to where the Beatles played for years and years before they were the Beatles, to Abbey Road, where they recorded mm-hmm. so many great things, to Strawberry Fields in New York, mm-hmm. to all these different places. It seems pretty amazing. I don't know if I understand exactly how it works, or if it only works, or what it works for. Can you explain it to me?
I mean, my understanding, I know it's coming out next week, my understanding is that I would hope that, maybe I'll put it this way, I would hope that it's giving you, I guess, a 360 experience of these places. Uh-huh. And so as you're looking in the places, it's giving you, you know, factoids about the creation of certain records or performances or whatever happened with the Beatles at that point of interest. But the fact that you can, you know, do the macro to micro approach with this experience, and you can actually see the street sign, or you can see the neighborhood that, you know, that the album was created in, or you could whatever the point of interest is, like the fact that you could have that whole immersive experience based on this technology, I think is pretty cool. And to be able to say that not only are we going to do it with popular culture, but just other different historical moments or things that are relevant to today's society, I think that's fresh to be able to say, hey, I might live in buttfuck nowhere, but I can have this experience and with my favorite brand or my favorite musician, and be able to kind of relive that.
Yeah,
I think it's dope. It's a different, it's a fresh way of storytelling, to be honest.
You know, I agree wholeheartedly, and I think that, like, it makes me wonder what storytellers like yourself or like us will be able to do, if it'll be allowed for us to be able to tell stories through this platform.
Right.
I mean, like, it's just another way for people, storytellers, to be able to utilize these emerging platforms to do other cool stuff.
Right.
So I'm just interested to see how it works out and how it will go. But sounds cool to me.
Yep.
I don't know. But moving forward, Friday or Thursday night, depending on who you are, tomorrow night, Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Is hitting theaters, and man, Warner Brothers has spent a gang load sure. of cash money on the promotion for this.
Marketing dollars, the marketing are high. Is
really high,
yeah.
Like really high. So that leads me to believe that they are very, very hot on this movie. They seem to believe that this is going to be really big, and the reviews are in, and it looks like they're right. The reviews are really excited about it. So
96% on Rotten Tomatoes, I believe.
Wow, I didn't check that. Wow, yeah, that's high. Strong.
Yep.
Okay, so needless to say, I mean, we had some small dealings with the Wonder Woman. We did something with South by Southwest for, but how do you feel about it?
Man, I'm excited about the film. You know, I think it's going to be a major W for DC, for Warner Brothers. I think they spent about $3 million on marketing. I see it everywhere. So I just hope that all the buzz and all the visuals that we've been seeing, you know, actually pay off the good story, you know. I can't imagine that this is going to be whack. I just can't imagine.
It's not going to be bad, but I just, at a certain point, I wonder about what is the tipping point between dollars spent versus marketing dollars spent versus overall yield for Warner Brothers' studio. In other words, like, they had to go all in on this because, obviously, they went all in on Batman versus Superman. They went all in on Superman. They went on Batman versus Superman. They're about to go all in on Justice League, which is pretty quiet, but maybe it's only quiet because Wonder Woman is out being loud right now.
Maybe.
But they were pretty quiet on Justice League. But it makes you wonder, what is the yield? Because if the movie costs, you know, almost $200 million to make,
right,
and then you spend another $170-180 million in marketing,
right? I misspoke. The $3 million that I was referring to was just ads.
Oh yeah,
ads, so
yeah, I mean, I think overall the marketing budget is somewhere like it's like 180 or something right. So you're talking about almost $400 million you're spending on this movie. I mean, I guess they're hoping for a $1 billion return.
Man,
those are high stakes.
Heck yeah.
I mean, even the movie makes $500 million. That's only $100 million profit for them. I mean, like, I guess it's really just about brand recognition and getting Warner Brothers and DC Universe back on the map.
Definitely. I mean, you got to think worldwide. It's going to make more than that. And then I would say too, like, because of where we are politically in the climate, I think just what Wonder Woman represents to society at this point in time, like the zeitgeist of women's rights and, you know, having such an iconic figure that means so much to young women or girls, and having that kind of like as the forefront, you know, usually it's, you know, it's usually a patriarchal or a male figure, but to have, you know, such a strong female figure to be able to, that we see everywhere, right. I think that's going to speak to a lot of people too.
So. Right. Well, I will say it's going to be, it's great to see such a iconic character celebrated. One place I know
that. Yeah, she's bad.
Well, she's stupid bad, but at Comic-Con, I don't know that every Wonder Woman I'll see will be super bad, but because I know like Comic-Con we saw a lot of questionable Harley Quinns last year at Comic-Con, male and female, I might add.
Oh man!
So I suspect that we'll see a lot of questionable Wonder Woman at Comic-Con this year, but you know, well, that's just par for the course.
That's
fine. I'm really excited about it though.
Yeah, man.
Speaking of which, everyone's trying to get in on the universes, right? Like, mm-hmm. So you know, Marvel's got. I mean, you know, Disney's got the Marvel universe. They've mm-hmm. got the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. They've got, I mean, they got the Disney Pixar universe. They got universes upon universes. Disney's got all kind of universes. And then obviously Warner Brothers has got Harry Potter, and they got DC. You know, and they're doing all stuff. Universal, like, I don't know, not so much. They got Fast and the Furious, but that's not really a universe, right?
No.
Like, they, you know, they kind of just low key down there. So they've said that they've been trying to do this for years and years and years. They've been trying to reach back, way back to their old franchises. They dug out a couple of them. They dug out King Kong, and they mm-hmm. dug out, you know, and they got Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, they're trying for the probably 10th or 15th time to revive their monster franchises.
Right.
But this time, they're really going all in.
They're going all in.
They already had a few Mummy movies, which did really well.
Right. I mean, this new mummy looks kind of fresh.
It does look kind of fresh. They had a few when they gave birth to one of the Rock's first movies, actually, and Brendan Fraser. They already had some Draculas, where the Draculas weren't really popping. They hadn't had Draculas popping yet.
Nope.
All these Draculas. They haven't had a Invisible Man that was quite popping. They tried one, and it wasn't quite popping with Kevin Bacon. They haven't had the Jekyll and Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
Frankenstein's ambient popping. But now they've got the new Dark Universe, which they've got all these monsters
mm-hmm.
that are kind of coming back. And as we see, yet to be explained, we've got Tom Cruise, who's clearly going to be the Mummy.
Right.
But we don't know how he's going to be the Mummy, but right. somehow he's going to be the Mummy. You got Russell Crowe, who's in the Mummy, who's plays Dr. Jekyll, which
right.
only means he might be Mr. Hyde as well.
Exactly.
So will he get his own standalone movie, Dr. Jekyll, and he's Russell Crowe?
Absolutely.
He can.
Yeah.
We got Johnny Depp now, who showed up. He's going to be the Invisible Man. You got my man Javier Bardem, who's going to be Frankenstein, who looks dope.
I mean, as you're reading it off, like, that sounds fresh.
It is fresh. So, like, to have all of them come back, and you know, and then we got maybe you know, Penelope Cruz, the Bride of Frankenstein, not announced yet, but they took a promotional photo with all of them in there, and it looks fresh.
It looks super.
And all these dudes are in their 50s, except for Homegirl, and you know, good for them, all in their 50s. I mean, they kind of long in the tooth to be some. You know, they didn't get no young monsters, but they got big stars. What do you think?
I love the fact that
are you skeptical at all?
No, I love the fact that they made that choice. I mean, fuck, they have to compete. Like you set the table brilliantly, and all the other big studios are killing it and raking in tons of money.
Right,
like they have to be able to, you know, go back and bring to life kind of their legacy content and legacy characters. And so I think this is a great way to do it with superstars versus like new faces, because just like looking at that photo and listening to you kind of like rattle off the names and what they are going to be like, that, just listening to that sounds like, yo, I want to see it.
Yeah,
I want to see what they do. Like, so I think it's fresh.
I think it's fresh, 1,000% fresh, except for, I'll play devil's advocate here, you're going to bring back the fresh new franchise, but you're going to wheel out old ass dudes and women. I mean, like,
but dudes, I mean, that bring in that money.
It's true. I mean, Cruz is still Cruz.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Javier Bardem is still Javier Bardem. I mean, Russell Crowe, I don't know. Is he falling off? Is Russell Crowe really bringing in the money right now?
I don't know.
Is he? And Johnny Depp is Johnny Depp, but I don't know.
Johnny Depp is spending the money.
He's spending the money, and I don't know. Like, Stranger Tides is kind of like, Johnny Depp ain't had a hit in a minute. He hasn't had a dramatic hit or action hit in a cool minute. So Johnny Depp definitely needs a hit. So it's like, if you're going to revive all these old monsters, do you get old stars? It remains to be seen, but I'm very excited about it nonetheless. Also, again, Universal, they brought back Godzilla successfully. They've also successfully brought back King Kong and Skull Island. Now they're going to put them together. King Kong versus Godzilla is going down. the fight of the century, and they got and they got a director, Adam Wingard, is going to direct, like he did the horror joint You're Next and the Blair Witch, which was supposedly pretty good, which I didn't see because I didn't care about. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Yeah, like it's going to be it looks good. I mean, did you see Skull Island?
I have not seen it.
No. Oh, okay. It was good.
It was?
Yeah, it was really strong. It was good. I'm one of the few people who actually liked Gareth's Godzilla. You see that one?
Yeah, I saw that one.
You like it?
I thought it was cool.
All right.
I thought it was
cool. Visually, that's a cool visuals.
Visually, yeah.
Yeah. So I would be very interested to see Godzilla versus King Kong. They did a very good job of making King Kong huge in this one. Right. So because King Kong normally is this big to Godzilla,
right?
But now they've made this King Kong as big as Godzilla,
like eye level.
Yeah. So now they can fight,
right?
So I don't know. I mean, I still got the little 13-year-old boy that wants to see two monsters get down and fight.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it should and be just cool.
Tear up cities.
Yeah. And second to last but not least, your boy Jay-Z, man. Title's like just fighting. They still fighting after all these years. Announcement to all the folks on stage, you know, Deadmau5 and the freaking Daft Punk and Madonna and Jay-Z and everybody up on stage, J. Cole. And it's just not really cracking like that, really. It's not, I haven't really, like, jumped off like the way it's supposed to.
I mean, they have a million subscribers, bro. A million. That's terrible.
Yeah. And so they're onto their third CEO in 2 years. 2 years, three CEOs. The new CEO is going to be announced. What do you think is the future of Tidal? We've been asking this question for 2 years. I feel like I've asked this question like 10 times in 2 years. What's going to happen to Tidal? They're still fighting.
Yeah, the wave is still cresting, I guess you can say. Like, it hasn't crashed. But I feel like even a million subscribers, not to downplay, you got to think that's, what, 10, 20 bucks a month, the reckoning, $10, $20 million a month.
Yeah.
I mean, that's substantial. I know that they have a huge presence with a lot of the live stuff. I just did a festival where Tidal was the official... video platform for it to cover it. So I know that they're really doing a good job in that space. I don't really see a lot of stuff that's sponsored or brought to you by Spotify or Apple Music on such like a large festival scale.
Yeah.
Maybe just I'm not privy to it, but I feel like
they're building that way. Maybe they're building in 2 right. years they'll be like the Coachella of the Tidal Festival.
Exactly.
They'll be in all the festivals.
Yeah, maybe. And, like, you might get a discount if you sign up for Tidal. Who knows? Like, I mean, they can offer it in a number of ways. But I feel like it's not a good sign when you have the top dog, the top seat of your company, filled, and then they leave, and then filled, and they leave. I think that's not a good sign.
Right.
What about you? What do you think?
I don't know. It's really hard to bet against Jay-Z. I feel like... You know, he has some of the four most famous words in rap and all of music.
I will not lose.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, he may not lose. I believe him. I believed him then. I kind of still believe him. And he's in it to win it. And he's been proven that he is a force to be reckoned with on all media. And he continues to do so. He just signed that crazy deal with Live Nation, which will keep him rapping and touring until his
50s.
Into his late 50s.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, he's in 10 years. He's 48 now. He'll be rapping his last concert on that deal. He'll be 58. Right. Talk about I Will Not Lose. So,
and then he sell a piece of Tidal to, I want to say, Sprint for $200 million?
Yeah.
I believe that's right.
He's making some moves. And then, of course... You know, the most underrated, underreported story is Jay-Z's got an album coming.
Yeah.
He's got music coming. I feel like that record's gonna be pretty good. And that'll help.
And will this be this could theoretically be the first record that is exclusively you can only get it from Tidal, right? I don't know if his last record was that.
No, his last record he did a Samsung joint.
Yeah, but you could
did Samsung joint initially, and then he did it. It was wide.
Right.
I think his last album predated Tidal, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So this will be the first record where, you can only get it from Tidal.
Yeah.
That might, you know, sway potential customers, subscribers.
Well, he already took all his music off Apple.
Right.
So he's already making moves. I mean, he's really betting on himself. He is Jay-Z. We'll see. I mean, like we'll see. Like we'll see what Drake. We saw what Drake did.
Yeah.
To Apple Music. So, I mean, the question is, but
he better come with that fire, though. He better come with that fire.
He has to. But here's the other thing. Like, here's a real question. Jay-Z is 48 years old.
That's okay. You just said Snoop was great just like 30 minutes ago.
But the point I'm making is like. I don't know. That's a long gap. As someone who's sort of working in this space right now, that's a big gap between Lil Yachty and Jay-Z in age. That's a huge gap, and there's a lot of folks in between. So, I mean, look, hip hop has gotten so big that it can't be everything to everybody,
right?
And it isn't monolithic in one and by anybody means. So it's like rock and roll is not monolithic, you know. But even country music at this point is not monolithic.
Right.
But, yeah, man, I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I get that point in terms of the age, you know, stratification, but I still think Jay-Z is the biggest icon that we have as it relates to hip-hop culture.
Hip-hop culture and hip-hop culture.
Hip-hop culture. He's the ambassador for us to the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, sure.
I feel like there's no one bigger than Jay-Z.
Yeah.
And I feel that he's still, I mean, like, he's in every category. He's in film. He's in TV. He has his own fucking music platform.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you have to respect him. So just that alone, you're going to listen to it.
He's still got the baddest chick in the game wearing his chain. I mean, he's still got that. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm really, really, really got my eyes peeled on this new Jay-Z record and what it does to the culture, because I really want to see the idea of, because we already know where when Beyonce drops something, the world stops and everyone pays attention.
That's right.
And everyone freaks out on that. The Grammys didn't, but like everyone, the culture really, really pays attention worldwide. So absolutely, she's got that on lock. Absolutely. I don't know who else can do that right now in pop music like Beyonce.
Nobody.
So the question is, can Jay-Z be that, you know, on the other side?
On the other side. Well, hey.
A lot of competition, a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I mean, especially because, I mean, we keep going on and on about this, but
especially because
his track record, every album has been a number one, right?
Yeah.
So he can't fuck up.
Yeah.
Like he'll probably buy his own shit to make it a number one. So,
I mean, yeah, whatever, 12 summers, 13 summers, whatever it is, straight. So I don't know. We will see. I'm going to skip this last drone story because I don't really care about it. But anything else you got?
Have you my order of business for this weekend in terms of my TV consumption is Dear White People Netflix. Have you seen it yet?
No, it's on the queue though.
Okay, I'm going to watch all of that.
I did watch all of. I finished Master of None last night.
Okay, season two.
Excellent.
I fell asleep on the first episode. I was probably just too tired.
I mean, it's definitely the first episode is definitely a French. I mean, an Italian impressionist.
Right, exactly. Black thing, and white.
Black and white.
I fell asleep. Like literally.
Yeah, no, it's good though, but it's definitely not.
Okay.
But I will say this. I'm interested for you, but I think Master of None is as a piece of just creative work is outstanding, because what he does is almost way. He did the same thing in season one, but in season two way more, where he's going with his storytelling,
right.
Like to be able to do that black and white weird episode and then do an episode that he's not even in, that's kind of like a slice of life.
It's almost like the Atlanta approach.
No, it's exactly like the Atlanta approach. Exactly. It's all to just him and Alan Yang, and they touch on everything from, you know, feminism to sexism to racism, mm-hmm. and to and it's everything. Yeah. And it got great actors in there like Angela Bassett, mm-hmm. and other folks just show up, and my boy Bobby Cannavale. It's excellent. And then it's got some heart and it's got some real depth, and I think he's high contender. Like him, I think him and Alan Yang, that they're up there with me with our boy Gambino. I'm sorry. It's really strong.
No, you're good. Madoff, have you seen that on HBO?
I'm
like three fourths on that.
I heard it's good.
It's great.
Okay.
De Niro's killing.
He's
killing.
Always,
he's such a great actor.
He's always.
But yeah, Dear White People, that's what I'm on. I don't know if you fuck with Bloodline, but I'm on that too.
Oh yeah, I gotta get season 3.
And this is the last one.
Yep.
And then you heard
Coach Chandler.
You heard about the news with what's the hip hop show on Netflix that just got canceled?
Oh yeah, your show, Down.
Yeah, they're canceled.
All that money, like $200 million down the drain.
Gosh.
Flush.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What's that?
Too much going on.
Anyway.
Yeah, I just feel like that's more to do with like the lack, I mean, they put a lot of money, sunk a lot of money into that vision, and it just wasn't cohesive enough.
Right.
I think they just really weren't, like, confident with Baz and all of his multi-showrunners to get that thing under control, because it's a lot good there, but it's just all over the place.
It is.
So you need someone to laser focus that joint, and they couldn't get it done.
Dang. Is that an L for Netflix?
That's an L for Baz. Man. It's not L for that. That's couch cushion money for Netflix. Yeah. Netflix will greenlight two more shows and make that money back.
True, but perception-wise, is what
I'm saying. I just feel like it was they're already sort of downplaying to the point where when they cancel it, no one's looking. Hmm. You know, I think that they're smart about that, but they also cancel it when they're releasing. You know, House of Cards is coming; they cancel that one, so they kind of like do a little bait and switch on you.
For sure. My last thing that's non-TV centric, but man, Nas and Lauryn Hill going on tour, man. We got to go. We got
to
go.
Gots to go situation.
We got to go. Tickets is on sale, I think, today. Wait, no, Friday.
That's a gots to go situation. Yeah. I feel like at Coachella one year, Lauryn came out. That's right. Lauryn came out one year, and that was dope. Yeah, we got to go. Lauryn came out on Coachella this year and supposedly killed it.
Really?
Yeah, she came out with, I forget who she came out with, but she came out with somebody and did like three songs and supposedly killed it. So, I don't know. We'll see. Every other time I've seen Lauryn, it's been suspect.
Yeah.
Even that time when she came out with Nas and they did Fire Over the World together.
Right.
So a little cracky in there. You know, not if it's not a good sign when Nas is singing, it's better than Lauryn's. Oh. Not a good sign when Nas' notes are better than L Boogie's, but I'm looking forward to it. We definitely will go to that.
All right.
Definitely will go.
All right,
all right, that's all I got. I guess we'll see you next week.
Next week.
Where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE.
You can find you. Find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell, and we will see you all next week. Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood redefined at 2.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.